This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hi, so I will jump. It's going to be a very interesting.
Let me apologize for eating during this. It's not going to. I will not eat that close to the mic.
That's good.
Oh, exactly.
Very good.
Yeah. I'll be posting the audio with the transcript and with the way I break this thing down, so you know, people will be able to enjoy your chewing.
Good. That's good.
Exactly. So let's jump into it. I walked into your movie not having seen any footage. I laughed my ass off. I'm very happy. It was the funniest film I've seen since Bridesmaids.
Okay, let's make sure that part is transcribed.
No,
verbatim.
No, it will be. I'll be more than happy.
I like that.
I'll be writing that on the site. I seriously laughed my ass off. It opens with a strong scene. I love the use of the CGI baby thing. Like, there's a lot of little bits that I really dug.
Yeah.
Every project, when you are doing it, changes along the way. How much of what we finally saw in the movie was there from day one, and how much was you guys finding on the set, improv, reshoots, whatever?
It's a lot of everything, but what I found most interesting is that we actually ended up going back to the script more by the end than we're so used to departing the script so much that in the end we sort of went, wait a minute, hold on, why did we all fall in love with this to begin with? We reread the script, and you realize that what's on here is actually fantastic.
Well, there was that, but there was also a 2, maybe 3 week process where Ryan and I and David Dobkin sat in a room along with John Lucas and Scott Moore. Just went through every single page and said, you know, does this sort of keep us on track perfectly? Can we top this joke? And it was just sort of a mutual sort of fine-tuning kind of effort that was incredibly fun, incredibly educational for me, because this guy over here has got a pen as sharp as any writer I've ever worked with. He threw me some incredible things to say and claim as my own. In the movie,
I was listening to your conversations in your trailer, then writing them down, handing them to you, and you thought I came up with them.
But by the time we started shooting, we were all as proud of the script as we possibly could, and then of course there's always little variables as you're shooting it on the day, but for the most part the script was in really, really good shape before we started working.
I've been asking this of people recently. When you, for this movie, I'm happy, it's like a fill-in-the-blank kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm happiest with, you can answer it however you want.
Wow, I'm happiest with blank.
No, exactly.
No, I'm actually happiest with blank. Blank is a friend of mine.
There we go.
And she is just, a real
Billy
knockout.
Blank.
Well, I'll be more specific. Was there a scene that you were nervous about that, say, came out a lot better than you expected? Mm. You know, like, you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, I'm happiest with...
I'm happiest in leather pants.
Something you weren't expecting.
I wasn't expecting to wear leather pants. I did in the movie. I'm happiest with the way the film ended for me, only because I like it when, in a movie that's PG or PG-13, the characters have to be completely and utterly transformed by the end. And what I like about our movie is that our characters kind of integrated the darker and the lighter aspects of themselves and become sort of slightly better. You know, it's not. Sure. I like that. I like that more so than the massive transformations that happen in these kind of more saccharine movies. So, in a rated R comedy, you're allowed to kind of get away with a lot more, and in the end, you don't have to really tie it up with the big bow in the way you know you do with like a Freaky Friday or something like that, some other body switching kind of comedy. So,
yeah, I would second that. There's I don't know if this is a part of that answer, but there's an effort to do more with this movie than I think we really need to do with it. You know, it's an R-rated body switching movie, so we could probably get away with satisfying an audience that is coming in and looking for, okay, this is going to be a fish out of water thing, and it's going to be kind of raunchy and risque because it's R-rated, and so just make me laugh a half a dozen times and I'll feel like it's money well spent. And hopefully we do that, you know, times three or four, but there's this sort of this not to turn people off, but there's an unexpected, I think, kind of heart and reality to the whole thing, if there can be such a thing and such an absurd concept, that is pretty satisfying, because you actually end up caring for these characters because we try to do it pretty real. This is not a big, silly, broad, you know, seltzer water in the face kind of humor. So you actually become somewhat emotionally invested in these characters, and so you like to see the finish lines that these people hit, and it's done in a very tasteful, sophisticated way, I think. So it delivers on levels that I think will please the conservative, the risque, the men, the women. It's a pretty full movie.
When you were first approached for the project, when you first hear about body switching, I mean, immediately there's like, okay, really? Body switching? Was it there a hard sell for you guys, or was it sort of like the script was like, okay, wait a minute, yeah, this is it?
I said, I'll do it if Jamie Lee Curtis does it.
No, it's Bateman.
Jason Bateman. If Jason Bateman does it, I will do it.
Yeah.
Bateman.
B, and not B-A-I. Bun. It's B-A-T-E. Okay. And not M-E-N.
Oh, no.
I think we probably both had the same reaction, which was, you know, really another body switching movie. And frankly, the only reason that I would like entertain even reading the script was because it was written by the guys who wrote The Hangover, and it's going to be directed by the guy who directed Wedding Crashers. So that sounds like these guys already know that the cynics are ready to drive their teeth into this thing and you know, rip it apart. Yeah. And so if they took it on, then it's probably pretty good. And I started reading it, and it's the funniest script I've ever read. And
I had the same reaction, because it was kind of a no for me, just right out of the gate. And then somebody said, no, really, just give it a read, and then say no.
Yeah, this version of a body-switching movie has never been done, and it's done by the most capable guys in the R comedy world. And so I read it, and then I was like, okay, who do I need to call, email, what ring do I need to kiss to get this part? And I did fire off emails, and I did kiss some rings, and I begged and pleaded for a long time to do this part. It's, you know, on top of it all, it's an actor's dream. It's Jekyll and Hyde. You know, you get to play two, you know, polar opposite parts inside the same movie. Justifiably, you know, you get to show an incredible range and sort of like stretch all your, you know, hokey acting muscles, whatever those phrases are, and I get to do it with, you know, one of the guys I like the most in the business personally, and one of the comic actors that I respect the most and like watching the most. So it was like this great, it's like, what's wrong? You know, there's it's too perfect. This will never happen.
Yeah.
And it did, and it came out so well, and I feel really, really lucky.
Yeah.
Well, can you talk a little bit about, obviously, I heard you guys became friends on set. Talk a little bit about...
Friends before, though.
Were you guys good friends before?
Yeah. Jason Bateman was the first guy that was nice to me in Hollywood. I'm actually not making a joke. I met him when I was... I must have been 19 years old. And we had the same manager, and I went in there, and I must have just looked like a deer in the headlights. I couldn't believe this town. I was right out of Canada. I mean, I just
fat
came
as
here.
Shit too.
Yeah, yeah, big fat guy. Came. I mean, I floated here on a pool toy from Canada. It was a long, long journey across the Pacific. And I got here and shook it off. And I was at this management firm, and Jason was also with these guys, and I met him there, and he just, you know, we had a nice hangout. I told him who I was and what I was doing here and all that kind of crap. And I got a call a couple of days later just from him, just left me a message saying, hey, if you need anything, I know it must be weird when you're in a new town, you don't know anybody. And he left me this really nice message, just call anytime if you need anything. I saved the message because I was like, he's hitting on me.
So, well, I was simply looking for an HJ.
Yeah.
I hear the Canadians really know how to tug on it. And I never did get that.
I didn't bring any of that primo Canadian weed with me, Bateman. No. I'm here because I'm trying to forge a career. Right?
That's very... So were you friends since then to present day?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew each other. We weren't real close during that time. But we were like a degree away from each other in our circles of friends. But so then later on, we got to know each other a lot more. But... you know, his wife, I worked with her dad years ago, and we have a lot of mutual friends as well. So
how was it on set, like, mannerisms and all that other stuff. How much did you guys study each other? And, you know what I'm talking about. Were you there to watch each other, to sort of give pointers?
No, because
we didn't. No.
It was never, you know, we're not, we don't do impressions. We're not as talented as those people on SNL and, you know, those that really know how to establish that and hold that and keep that ball in the air for an hour and a half to the point where it wouldn't be distracting. Because if we were to try to do impersonations of each other, yeah, it would suck so often that it would be distracting.
Like, you know, it's the worst Jason Bateman I've ever seen.
Right, and I cannot concentrate on this movie. So we basically said mutually to David Dobkin, hey, are you cool if we don't try to replicate the facial tics and meter and motions and all that stuff of each other? Can we just, I'll play my version of a straight arrow and then of a slacker, and then he'll play his version of a slacker and then a straight arrow. And won't that work? Because we're really only, you know, in the first character for 10 pages, and then the whole balance of the movie were in the other guy. So he said, yeah, absolutely. So we tried to carry one or two or three, I don't even remember what makes it in the final movie.
A few little things that we just kind of carried through the movie just for some symmetry
and
changeover.
But for the most part, we just hope that the audience just kind of gets used to me in this character and him in that character.
Yeah.
And
I mean, the first 10 minutes of the movie is just set up. I mean, it's you know, you want to set up Mitch as like the worst guy you could ever have take care of your children. And, you know, you want to say set up Dave as this you know, guy who just feels like he's just missed out on everything in life. And, you know, it's a lot of pipe to lay and establish, like, mannerisms and those sorts of things that are going to be carried over later on. So we just thought, fuck it, we don't need all that.
Can you talk a little bit about, there's some really good stuff that you can only show in an R-rated movie.
Are you talking about the nudity?
Sure. Nudity. You know what it is? I also, because I know people are going to read this or listen to this before the movie comes out, and I don't want to spoil any of the jokes.
Oh.
But, you know, like, the opening scene alone, I don't know, you can do that in a PG-13. You know,
certain... What do you mean? Take a shit in the guy's mouth?
Mm-hmm. Perhaps. I'm talking about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but what's funny is, and I think the reason maybe I connected to it so much is my sister has kids, and there's a lot of realism in the movie, like, with stuff. Where was the line between, like, you know, Hollywoodizing the, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I think that there's, you know, with raunchy R-rated comedy, there is a way to make it palatable and not gratuitous and offensive. And I think that lies in the execution of it, obviously, in the way that it's shot, the way that it's directed, the way that it's performed, the music that's under it, the editorial sort of strategy and all that stuff. I mean, perfect example in Bridesmaids, you know, when Maya Rudolph takes a shit in the middle of the street, you know, if she had done some big wonky face as she's sitting down to take her shit on the street, that would have been like stupid and silly and over the top. But she doesn't. She sits down pleasantly and with some shame and totally straight face with no winking at all, and she's mortified.
Exactly why that movie is so hard to masturbate to.
And you actually empathize with her as opposed to go, oh, well, that's just a stupid fucking, you know, that's just a raunchy comedy bit. So hopefully in the scenes that we have of that ilk in our film, there is hopefully something similar in our execution, mm-hmm. something tasteful if you can be with some of this stuff.
Last question.
I will definitely push it a little bit and say, let's talk a little bit though about CGI babies and those scenes. How much was that? Was all that scripted? And could you sort of talk about filming that stuff? Because that's some really funny shit, especially in the kitchen.
Because of some things that happened in my past, I actually wasn't allowed around the babies, mm-hmm. but Jason was, and he was.
My stuff's gonna get cleared up though.
Don't worry about that.
The babies were amazing. They were real. They did basically everything aside from, you know, the poor kid slamming his head against the crib. But those kids did everything. What was fake were some of the walls, actually. So, well, like for instance, when that baby licks the light socket, he's just kind of just crawling forward. We put the wall in front of his face afterwards, mm-hmm. And put the sparks in afterwards. There were men in green suits
you know, that
some like, very funny stuff,
like a green screen suit, a guy all wrapped up in green, that could be there, manipulating the baby so they don't crawl off of the counter and fall, and then of course you eliminate the green guy later. So
one of those babies loved me, and one of them just fucking hated me. Like, really just saw me as the Antichrist. I don't know why. Like, you put that one baby in my arms, and it just bawled. The other one, was like, it was great. We had a love connection. I was ready to, like, steal that kid, which I hear is frowned upon.
No, yeah, not allowed in this country. Yeah.
In Atlanta, it is allowed.
Oh, it is. You're allowed to just take a baby.
Absolutely.
If you have a better plan for that baby, you could just snatch it.
Atlanta is a whole different beast.
I like that.
Yeah, in case you didn't know these things. I
got
to wrap with you, but I am going to ask what's coming up for both of you. Specifically, a little RIPD. I'm not really sure.
I'm not in that.
Yeah. No, not yet. We'll see how this thing with this young kid named Jeff Bridges goes.
I'm ready. I'm waiting.
RIPD, I start that in, soon, in the end of August, we're going to head out there and just start workshopping it, and then we'll be shooting a couple weeks later. So
where do you shoot that?
Boston.
Nice.
Beantown, which would be great. It's just, you know, we're both dead cops, and I got a fantastic dead cop partner named Jeff Bridges, who's playing a kind of a sheriff from the Wild West, and he's been doing it for a couple hundred years, and I'm, of course, recently deceased. And just a great story, great, you know. To me, it feels like, you know, one of those kinds of stories that Spielberg would tackle a long time ago. You know, just a real, real adventure.
And it's Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, is that too? Yeah, can't go wrong there.
No.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And Mr. Bateman.
I don't have anything as envious in the pipeline, but we are doing some heavy flirting with a couple of things that are exciting, but they are not RIPD.
No.
I understand. Contracts have not been signed.
Exactly, sir.
I've heard this before from other people.
It's always tough to say you're doing anything until you break for lunch, like, the third day.
Exactly.
I always feel like there's no... You're not really making a movie until, something's definitively in the can.
Right.
And I say third
and then
day
two
because,
weeks
like,
of it.
The first 2 days they're scrutinizing, like, is it really worth it? Should we keep going?
We could pull the plug now and still call insurance.
Yeah.
I'm going to say thank you so much. Let me hit stop.